From the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax, but buckle up, and let's wade into the deep end of what's really happening in your old North State.
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. I'm here with my good friend Brooke Medina, and we're going to discuss my favorite topic today, gender-neutral toys. Got a lot of thoughts on this. And then, of course, another one of my favorite topics, loneliness, corporate welfare, and more specifically on that, JDIG. And we're going to get to some Civitas polling today as well. Brooke, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's been a good week so far. Thanksgiving behind us, Christmas ahead.
I'm really excited about Christmas. Can't wait. Little James hugged his Christmas tree last night. We set up one yay tall, and he just wrapped his arms around it. So that was really
sweet. It was a fake tree, I think.
Yeah, that's a fake tree. We're going to go out and get a real tree here shortly, but we set up a little fake one that he got from his grandma, and he just hugged it.
Aw, well, that's sweet. Yeah. It's really sweet. It's a little Charlie Brown tree, and him are friends.
Yep.
So yeah, we've got a Christmas tree now, but we have not decorated it. So we plan to decorate on Friday and knock it all out. But it's a real tree this year because we have been fake tree fans for a very long time because it's cheaper. But this year I convinced my husband to get us a real tree.
So how many gender neutral toys have you brought for your kids yet for Christmas?
Tons. I always make sure to stay very, very aware and, attuned with the times. And so I don't want my children to feel left out or like they aren't being included.
I was hoping you were going to say none so I could call you deplorable and make fun of you and all that stuff.
Yeah, actually, I am not someone that is extremely sensitive to whether or not a toy is marketed as gender neutral, but it seems like toy makers or at least retailers care quite a bit about this. I've been seeing some headlines about having gender-neutral Christmas toys.
Yeah, I think the Obama White House had kind of a summit related to this stuff a few years ago. So it's not uncommon in popular culture and in common culture now, the call for gender-neutral toys. I mean, you can just Google it and you'll see articles. In fact, I think it was like just searching through Google today, it took me like 5 or 6 pages before I saw an article that wasn't positive about the gender-neutral toy phenomenon. So that was interesting, I thought. It's been called the pink and blue divide, and some of it relates to STEM, right? Science, technology, I don't remember.
Engineering, mathematics. Engineering,
math, mm-hmm. Right? So that acronym is very popular. Just in trying to close the gap, because males obviously excel in those fields a little bit more than females. So one of the purposes...
So it's the toy's fault. It's really got to be...
Yes, the toy's fault.
That's why males excel in those fields.
But I was really big into G.I. Joes when I was little. I mean, I had so many G.I. Joes. Probably spent a small fortune on G.I. Joes. And I can't think... The only thing I was thinking back today, the only gender-neutral toy I had was a... You remember Pound Puppies?
Yes!
I had a Pound Puppy, yeah. But I had the boy one, Spike. But I remember thinking, when I got it, I must have been like 8 or 9 and thinking, this is really girly, the Pound Puppy.
So Ray, even how then, unwoke of you. Oh my goodness, what a misogynist. Wow. Well, yeah, those of us that want to make sure that we are very PC this Christmas, there are Toys R Us in the UK, at least. I don't know if this is going to be the case in the US, but they are phasing out boys and girls aisles. So that way, your children don't get shamed, I guess, into choosing one particular gender over another when it comes to toys. Because why would girls want to actually be drawn to, I don't know, Barbie dolls? And
Barbies are hot.
I remember you saying this before we started recording. Ray has a crush on Barbie dolls.
I do. Barbie is hot. There's no doubt about it.
She is
ideal woman. She doesn't talk. She looks... No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, wow. Heard on Civitalk this week.
No, but
Ray will
seriously,
not be joining
though,
us next
seriously,
week.
Though, Barbie is very hot.
Okay. I guess I could make some comments about G.I. Joe, but I'm going to be the grown-up here. And so I was reading this article, and it says that marketers spend a lot of money trying to convince us that boys and girls need fundamentally different products. Well, no, says this author. Unfortunately, girls often get undervalued in this process, provided dolls, kitchen supplies, and pink laptops with half the functions, while boys get Legos and other scientific toys. Well, I'm sorry, but what if a girl enjoys playing with kitchen supplies? I've got one of my daughters is very, very domestic. She loves baking. She likes dolls. I mean, all of those girly things she gravitates toward. My other daughter didn't.
Right.
And that was okay, too.
Yeah, it's totally
fine. I mean, my parents
fine.
Bought me toy trucks when I was a kid because I enjoyed playing with them. But this whole narrative around things having to be just eliminating these gender distinctions while still making gender distinctions, but just politically correct ones, it becomes problematic over the long term. I don't think it's long sustainable, but I just think it's silly. They're just so worried about offending people that everything, little boys and girls now have to dress similar to one another.
Yeah, I mean, Celine Dion has a clothing line. Have you seen this? The gender neutral clothing line. I don't know much about it, but I've seen people talking about it on social media, her new gender neutral clothing line. I think I saw a couple pictures. The clothes looked like you would dress like a bag lady almost or something. To me, that's what it looked like. You know, it looked a little bit like smocks or something.
Yeah, I guess because, well, as girls get older, obviously, if something's form-fitting, it's going to show that they're a girl.
And yeah, so it's almost like you're dressing your kid like a monk, whether they're a boy or a girl. Everybody looks like a monk.
Tonsured hairstyle, is that going to be the next thing? Ew.
Yeah, but I mean, boys gravitate, just, I can tell, I have two boys, one that's playing with toys, one that just kind of sits there because he's, you know, a little over a month old. But James, he gravitates towards boy stuff. I mean, it's mm-hmm. just natural. He likes trucks, he likes doing stuff outside. I mean, he's got cooking stuff, but it's his grill outside. And he likes playing with that. But he also likes, he plays with the girls and he'll play dollhouses and he'll play a little bit of that for some time. But even we heard that he was told that he wasn't playing tea party right. So, you know,
He wasn't playing it right by the girls. Throwing it over the
girls told him he wasn't playing right because he probably wasn't sitting there and being super dainty and, you know, sipping his cup.
He's learning how to tolerate girly things for the time that he has a girlfriend or a wife and has to put up with that sort of stuff. So,
yep.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I am not going to be shopping for Christmas gifts for my children based on whether or not it is a gender neutral toy. And it doesn't seem like you are either. But something I do want to talk about going into the holiday season, and it is a problem, but I think it's becoming an increasingly prominent problem, is loneliness. And The Economist actually just released an article a couple of days ago, and it's titled "Loneliness is a Serious Public Health Problem." And so you and I have both taken a look at this, but I think it's really interesting to show that there was a recent study done on three wealthier nations, Japan, United States, and the United Kingdom, and just tracking the loneliness levels in these wealthier countries. And the conclusions were that it's not necessarily that wealthier countries are naturally more lonely. They just decided to run the research on these particular countries. But the study did find that 9% of adults in Japan, 22% in America, and 23% in Britain always or often feel lonely or lack of companionship.
Right.
So I thought that was that means that almost a little over one in every five people in the United States feels lonely. But something that I didn't get to tell you this before while we were planning, but something that stood out to me was that the historical data about loneliness is scant, but isolation does seem to be increasing. So loneliness may be too. So back before 1960, less than 10% of people lived alone. Now, the vast majority of people in places like Stockholm live by themselves.
Right.
Well, what happened around the 1960s? There was the sexual revolution. I think that there is some sort of correlation
Absolutely.
Between people going inward and trying to just live this life for themselves rather than having this communal family-centric life. And there has been a breakdown in the family, and we've seen an increase in loneliness. I'm not saying they're one cause the other per se, but I think it's something worth
looking
into.
Oh, there's definitely a tie there. Sinclair Lewis, I think he wrote The Jungle, some other novels. I believe he was the one, I don't know if I have this quote correct, but I believe he's the one that said that cities are some of the loneliest places on earth. And I think he's right about that. I mean, if you're in an urban dwelling, and maybe also just the mass amount of people moving into urban areas after, of course, just the industrial revolutions in the U.S. have helped increase loneliness because you have people moving into urban areas. A lot of times, I think a third of people living in urban areas are just over a third live in apartments by themselves, even in the United States. So I think that does create a level of loneliness that is, you know, a new phenomenon. And of course, social media is playing this into this. I mean, people look on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatever. They see a lot of photos of people having fun, and maybe they feel left out. And so I think there's probably a correlation there too, or a tie in there. So I do think the sort of rise in the urban lifestyle has probably played into the loneliness. One of my favorite writers is Eudora Welty, and she had this great quote. I think it's from just an autobiography or a story she wrote, but it was about herself. And she was from Mississippi, and she moved up to the big city. She lived in the suburbs of Wisconsin, but of course she went into Chicago a lot. And she wrote, "I would wander down to Chicago and through the stores. I could feel such a heavy heart inside of me. It was more than the pangs of growing up, much more. It was some kind of desire to be shown that the human spirit was not like that shivery winter in Wisconsin, that the opposite to all this existed in full." So I think when you're in a city and your environment surrounded by lots of people, sometimes that can create a deeper level of loneliness than maybe you would be if you were just a little bit more isolated in a rural area around fewer people, but like you said, more of a community.
Yeah, well, because if you're not, if there's a lot of people around you, but you're not interacting with any of them, then that only increases your awareness that you're not in relationship with these people, because there's more people to look at and realize you're not relating to any of them.
Right.
And it is problematic. You touched on social media. So during this survey, roughly as many found social media helpful as they thought as found it made it their loneliness feelings worse. So I think it's sort of a mixed bag, which we often point to social media as a problem. I don't think it's a problem or a good per se. It's just a tool, and it's an avenue, and we can use it for good or for bad. But I would say the distraction, though, is for us to go inward and look at our screens and not interact with our own family members. And so that becomes problematic. And I think that can contribute to the feelings of loneliness. So social media itself, maybe not, but the way we utilize it.
Absolutely.
So,
and we're people that are just created for relationship, right? If you're a Christian, you worship a God that's triune. So he's in a relationship. And so we're meant to reflect that relationship. And when we're isolated and when we're alone, and we're not just sort of thriving in relationship, then we don't reflect our Creator, who is perfect relationship. So I think that really gets to the key of sort of the loneliness epidemic that is happening. I think people, like you said, are just turning inward and are not seeing themselves for who they were created to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the biggest problems, I think, that the people don't recognize sort of their outward manifest to sort of reflect the Creator.
Right. Well, when we're taught, whether implicitly or explicitly, that life is about enjoying it for ourselves, that like that only carries us so far. There's not a lot of fulfillment in that. It's temporary fulfillment. Granted, there is some enjoyment in being able to do things that you like, but there is so much more fulfillment and joy in actually being in community, giving to others. And so something you touched on last week's radio broadcast was that if you are feeling lonely, one of the best things you can do is reach out to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of get out of yourself. And that obviously is very satisfying, and it encourages relationship. It helps us move beyond self-reflection and looking inward at maybe a lot of darkness and loneliness if we don't have others around us. And it encourages us to look at life through someone else's eyes. So, but I wanted to talk really quickly before we move on that this burden, or this loneliness and this burden of just kind of isolation has led to a lot of health problems, it seems. And so that's something that I think healthcare policy may intersect with in the near future, is if loneliness, if one out of every 5 to 4 Americans is experiencing loneliness, and loneliness has been tied to certain diseases like heart disease and cancer, yeah, and things like that, as well as higher rates of suicide and depression, then there's going to be some real implications on the policy front. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, I just think it's a matter that I think this country has to deal with going forward in terms of being able to diagnose and treat loneliness without just, you know, maybe prescribing somebody a medication or over-medicating people, because there are some people that obviously need prescriptions and some people that I think, frankly, may be over-medicated in some instances of, depression. But their fundamental or the underlying condition is really one of loneliness. So I think it's a matter of kind of navigating that and understanding that. And I think parents have to do a better job of teaching kids about technology and sort of instructing them and putting them in the right direction, which is hard to do today, Brooke, because we're the worst offenders. We're often more sometimes worse offenders than our children when it comes to screens and technology. So I think that's really the pandemic or problem that I think a lot of Americans face, because we need to train up our kids to take breaks, to socially interact better. You know, I need, that's something I need to do myself, is to just do a better job of socially interacting. And sometimes it's just easier to retreat to a safe space, which is a screen, reading news or
It requires more effort, not even just physically, but emotionally more effort to engage with people face to face.
Sure. And I'm naturally a little bit more introverted. So sometimes it can be hard for me to go out and socialize. You know, I like to do it in small doses or spurts, but, you know, I have to be a little bit intentional about going up to people and talking with people, because it's not necessarily my natural personality all the time.
Yeah. Well, and not to mention, even as an extrovert, which I am, going out means that I also need to set aside my own selfish desires of things I want to talk about and listen to what is going on in other people's lives.
Yeah.
And us humans, unless you're extremely just one of those really, really saintly people, we generally would rather talk about ourselves or do something that satisfies and pleases us.
A lot of you out there can't see the halo over my head. So,
yeah, it's an invisa halo, but Ray is very saintly. As he talks about how hot Barbie is. But anyways, okay.
You're never going to let me live that down.
No, but I'm going to bring it up.
She's a good-looking girl. She's a good-looking lady.
She's a good-looking Barbie doll.
She doesn't get credit.
Anyways, okay. I think we have camped on that long enough. And so I want to talk about JDIG, which JDIG is something that, if you're not following North Carolina politics super closely, you might not know what it means, but it is the Job Development Incentive.
That's right.
Grant.
I couldn't remember the last acronym. I was going to say program,
but I'm like, no, the GP, no. So anyways, that is something that the General Assembly is working on this week. They are in session right now. So they went back and are finishing their session. It's not a special session, but they're just finishing up what they had done over the summertime. And they were going to work out implementing language for the voter ID. But they also decided they would expand corporate welfare.
Yeah, they're going to raise the cap for the tax incentives for corporations and
for certain corporations areas.
Yeah, if you have higher end salaries. So my big problem with this, in you know, from a fundamental level, I think we're not asking the questions of what is the purpose of government. That's number one. Government's job is not to pick winners and losers in the private sector and pit other, you know, bigger private sector corporations or companies against smaller ones, whether it's, you know, Amazon against a smaller box store or a smaller retail. It's not fair to give Amazon special grants, special incentives that you wouldn't give to another company or corporation or just small business. So I think that's one of the big issues.
Even Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez recognized that about
absolutely.
Amazon. A socialist recognizes it.
I think there's people on the right, whether it be conservatives, conservative free marketers, libertarians, and socialists that are in agreement on this. I think that those two sort of ideologies come together very easily on this issue, because it's an issue of fairness in the marketplace, and it's an issue of fairness for just employers, employees, and it's just, to me, it's just a fundamental, not a task of government to pick winners and losers. So I think that's really the key proposition that we need to look at, instead of just saying, well, it's going to bring in so many jobs, it's going to bring this many high-paying jobs, it's going to boost our GDP in the state by this. And I think that that's the wrong way to look at it, when you can look at it a more holistic way. And I think one thing, Brooke, is just to look at it this way, is everybody's saying, you know, got people saying, well, if we're not in this business, then we're going to lose out, right? North Carolina's going to lose out some of these corporate jobs. And I think one way that North Carolina can distinguish itself is by not doing that, right? If all these states are doing it, it seems like to me North Carolina can distinguish itself by saying, you know, look, we're going to make it fair for everybody in this state. We're going to give corporate tax cuts for everybody in the state. We're going to make corporate taxes low for everybody, or we're going to eliminate corporate tax, whatever policy you agree upon. I think it's an ultimate issue of fairness. And I think most people can see that and agree with that.
Yeah, well, and I think you hit the nail on the head there, eliminating the corporate income tax. So if you make it a favorable situation for every business, big or small, then yeah, you don't have to confront accusations of being unfair and picking winners and losers, because you're not. You're just creating a level playing field. And that's really the kind of equality that our founders expected and structured the government for. It wasn't even sameness, like equality has been co-opted right. to mean that nowadays. But it's this this ability to have equal opportunity.
Equal opportunity,
and,
right.
And corporate welfare, such as JDIG, does not allow for that. But even without these incentives, North Carolina, Forbes just ranked North Carolina number one for best state for business.
That's great.
So that's incredible. But yet the General Assembly, they're falling all over themselves saying we're losing out. And so Donald Bryson, our president, he's been on Twitter today just speaking out against this. And he's saying, who are we losing out to? Everyone ranked below us? We're number one. So why do we need to offer these?
Yeah, I think that's the key proposition and kind of differentiating yourself even more. If you're number one, is saying, look, we're not going to pick winners and losers in the state. We're going to make it accessible for everybody. We're going to make markets accessible for everybody in the state to compete. It's going to be a fair and level playing field. And I think ultimately people resonate to that if you go out and make the case for that. I think if you can differentiate yourself, I know it was the mayor of San Francisco. I can't remember his name, and he was a Democrat. He said he wasn't going to get involved in the Amazon bidding war because he said, we're not going to stoop to that level. We're not going to sloop down and sink to sort of, I think he used the word prostituting ourselves out to these corporations when he says, you know, our city is open for business for anybody. Mm-hmm. And I think he has the right idea there. And I think that needs to be more said, more from the rafters and rooftops from conservatives and free market proponents, that this is a state that is for everybody. We don't pick winners and losers. We don't say Amazon is in a higher position than, say, you know, a small box store or a small business.
Right. Not to mention incentives. They only work so much. And wasn't it Chiquita, that the Chiquita company that was in North Carolina? We lured them with incentives, and then they ended up going somewhere else once those incentives expired. And so that obviously you get this influx into your economy, and then it leaves. Whereas there's other places like Amazon, it really wasn't about the incentives in the first place. It doesn't seem like there was just other components to their decision. So there's just a lot of factors, and it would just be easier if state lawmakers could wash their hands of the corporate welfare and just keep the playing field level and fair for all people. But they don't want to do that. And one of the reasons I would say it is because they want to attend these ribbon cutting ceremonies.
Yeah, I think that's
a
big part of it. There's a big part of it. They want to deliver. I think on the positive side, we saw some blowback from that. I mean, you had press conferences from Cuomo, the governor of New York, after landing the big Amazon gig, and other politicians up there. They got a lot of pushback from Ocasio-Cortez and others, but just from their constituents saying, hey, we don't want to subsidize this company. We don't want to be a part of that. We don't want these, we don't necessarily want all these employees coming in that we're going to subsidize. And so I think that's a positive. I think voters and constituents are waking up to that, to a little bit more. It's a long road to hoe, of course, because it's just so many incentives and so much pressure from corporations trying to play these states against each other and pit these states against each other. So it's a long battle to fight. But I think it's one that has the ability that free marketers can win on if they go out and make the case.
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, Civitas has been one of the few that has been speaking out vehemently against this.
Yep, I'm glad.
Here in the state of North Carolina, so am I. So we are committed to free markets, and we're committed to making sure that the playing field is level for everyone. Our president, he was just actually quoted in ABC 11. If you go to abc11.com, one of their articles, and he said taxes should be applied fairly and uniformly. Unfortunately, legislators seem to want to ensure some companies pay lower taxes while the rest of the taxpayers are holding the bag with artificially higher rates. It's a terrible place where big business and big government are in bed together at the expense of taxpayers. And that is just that pretty much encapsulates it right there. It's big business, big government, and we're left holding the bag.
Yep.
So problematic to be sure, but yet the General Assembly seems intent.
I mean, how would you feel if you were a small business guy just kind of scraping by? And let's say you're selling a lot of retail products that are similar to Amazon, and then Amazon comes in and gets this big sort of big incentive, big grants, all kinds of perks and stuff. And you're not going to feel well. You're not going to feel like the state is standing up for you, that your government exists for your benefit. You're not going to feel close to your government because your government is pitted and basically conspiring against your business. So
for all the platitudes that we hear from government officials about being pro small business,
right?
Well, prove it by your actions. So anyways, let's move on though, because we just conducted a poll. And I think it's rather insightful poll. It's our final one until February.
Yep.
So we want to make sure that we discuss this because it has to do with healthcare policy, Medicaid expansion. But it also, we had some other interesting results that you wrote about with respect to Trump and a potential Democratic candidates running in 2020. So why don't you tell us about that?
You can check out our entire poll at nccivitas.org. I mean, it's all there. So if you want to go and read it for yourself. But I think what I wanted to do was highlight this fact. And everybody's been making this point that North Carolina is a swing state in 2020. Well, no duh. We all know that, of course. But I wanted to kind of highlight the fact, because we always hear in the news, Ohio, Florida, Ohio, Florida, Ohio, Florida. But I wanted to make the point that North Carolina is actually more of a swing state, I believe, in 2020 than Ohio and Florida. Those states will be swing states too, because they traditionally are. But I think North Carolina is the quintessential model. I mean, Florida, you have an instance where you had two Republicans win recently in the midterms when they weren't expected to. Florida Senate, Rick Scott defeated Bill Nelson, a longtime incumbent there, and also DeSantis defeated Andrew Gillum, who was expected to win. He was pulling.
That was a huge upset.
That was a big upset. He was pulling like 3 or 4 points before election night. So that was a big upset. In Ohio, of course, Florida's just been trending GOP, I think, for a while. In Ohio, I mean, Trump won by like over eight points. It was a little over 8 points. And that, in North Carolina, it was like 3.7. So that's a big spread there, 8 points in 3.7 or whatever it was in North Carolina, 3.6. So I just think I see evidence that those two states are trending Republican in a way that North Carolina is not. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a little bit more about that. You can check that out on our blog. And I'm not going to rehash everything, but the
can
main
we talk real quick. I'm sorry. I don't sure. want, but Gillum and DeSantis, you and I were actually looking at an article the other day regarding how DeSantis won the minority, the black women vote.
He didn't win it, but he got a good chunk.
Won it, but he won it compared to other Republicans. Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah. So he didn't actually win that vote, but he made a lot of headway compared to other Republicans. And that was because of his school choice messaging.
Right.
And so that's something imperative that I think a lot of other Republicans or conservatives, libertarians can learn from. And that's realizing that there are certain policies that are going to be more important to different demographics and communities. And if for a parent, if their children are in failing schools and they don't have the resources to be able to send them to private school on their own, something like that, that can make them a single issue voter, whereas they may have voted Democratic in the past and veer away from that party because the Gillum campaign tried to paint it as being racist.
Right. There were a lot of Gillum proponents who were saying after the election that, well, you know, the black vote sold them out in certain in certain areas of the state and in certain sort of demographics that they sold them out. And it's just this sort of identity politics that all black voters must vote for a Democrat black candidate. And that wasn't the case because, like you said, there was this single issue of school choice where some black men and some black mothers looked at that and said, no, we want to continue with the policies put in place largely by Jeb Bush and other Republican governors in Florida. And we want to continue on this path that allows basically a huge tax break and a huge check to send my kid to a private school that we choose to do. And so it's a very popular policy in Florida that has a lot of support just statewide. So it has obviously support among various ethnicities. And just in that state too, I mean, Rick Scott was very aggressive in going after Hispanic and Puerto Rican voters. He ran Spanish language ads, and I was amazed to read that Bill Nelson didn't. So you just saw different things like that, I think, in the race. But those are states, I think, Ohio and Florida, that are trending more Republican, while North Carolina is not. And a large part of that is because just an influx of people from parts of the Midwest and the Northeast especially who are coming in and just sort of settling in urban areas in North Carolina and tend to just be more liberal, I think, socially. Mm-hmm. And so it's a challenge, I think, for conservatives to reach them. And they're obviously going to have to do a better job reaching them because this state is trending blue while North Carolina or while Florida and Ohio aren't.
So do you think that there's an opportunity for conservatives to begin making some headway on urban policy or areas that are policy areas that really would impact younger people that live in the Charlotte, Mecklenburg area, as well as Wake County, Greensboro, things like that?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of areas that headway they can do with that. And I think a lot of it just has to do with going out and making your case. It's hard because some of these people have been conditioned, I think, to look to government first. So I think you have to go in and be authentic and not try to, you know, pander necessarily. But I think go in and be authentic. Talk about the cost of living in certain urban areas that you're pricing people out of buying a house. What can conservatives do to remedy some of these things? What can they do to put more money in the pocketbook of young people to provide them better opportunities to have more ownership in an urban area instead of just maybe being an apartment dweller. There's nothing wrong with that, but if someone wants to go out and buy a house, there needs to be better opportunities to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so many young families are being priced out of Wake County, right, and they're having to move out to Johnston County, Youngsville, just other areas because it's just too expensive. And some of that has to do with the bonds, you know, just extra higher taxes, things like that.
And
well,
zoning issues.
Zoning problems. So there's a lot there. But we're out of time for the radio portion of this. If you're on Facebook, go ahead and stick around, and we'll be talking to you guys in just a moment. But thank you all for joining
us. Yeah, thank you. And thanks to my co-host, Brooke. Did a great job. We really appreciate you out there, and thank you for tuning in.
Have a good week.
Thank you.